Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore the skills and competencies needed to face the new realities of work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Skills of the Future, and our mini-series on HR Game Changers, Skills and Competencies Needed to Face the New Realities of Work. My name is Andrea Butler, and I'm a principal consultant and co-founder at Perennial Talent. My guest today is Chris Ziliok. She's the Vice President of Global Institutional Training for Ecolab Incorporated. Her team is responsible for designing and implementing impactful learning experiences that contribute to the achievement of the strategic objectives of the business. Prior to joining Ecolab, Chris was the Chief Learning Officer and Director of Global Learning and Development at SC Johnson & Sons Incorporated, as well as a learning and development manager at ConAgra Brands. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm so happy to be here.
So let's start off with our fun question, or we hope it's fun. What is the best thing that you have watched or read lately?
You know, this is probably maybe not as fun. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to this. In the L&D space, I think one thing that's really exciting is some of the neurology and how the brain plays into it. So I have Thinking Fast and Slow as a book that I have been slowly getting through as I have time, but really nerding out over everything neurology and some of the impacts in the learning and development space. And I think that's been really fun. And I actually stole that idea from some marketers I used to work with that really talked about how it can impact marketing. But I look at it more from the lens as L&D and how we can really think about the behavior shifts and how the brain impacts it. So it's been fascinating.
Interesting. I'll add that to my reading list then, which is getting longer by the minute.
There's so much to do.
Oh,
so much to read.
So much good content out there right now, that's for sure. So let's get on to some of our more HR-focused questions then. So how would you say the world of work has changed right now? And what do you think the impact has been in terms of more employees working remotely?
Yeah, the pandemic has obviously brought a lot of changes to the world of work. And I think one of the biggest ones has really been around how our boundaries have become really blurred. And, you know, especially for those workers who are working from home when they've traditionally worked in an office setting. I think back, like many of us left offices in March, probably naively thinking we'd be back soon, right? Weeks or maybe a month or two later. But we haven't been back and may not be back well into 2021. Although working from home definitely has its pros and cons, I think during the pandemic, it has definitely created this opportunity and need for us to set up boundaries, right? For ourselves, our team, for our family, because it's just everything is now really blurred together. And, you know, given that this is now the back to school season, you know, especially for those, I think, who are playing these different roles at home and may have children at home and are, you know, maybe doing education, either, you know, part of the time digitally or full time at home. That has also created more blurring of some of those roles and things, which has just been a different challenge. So, it's definitely been, you know, more complicated in our professional life, but our personal lives too. And, you know, I think about this a lot as a leader of my team. You know, it's really hard. Especially for us supporting businesses and our customers, you know, that are, you know, severely impacted by the pandemic, the work feels very urgent and critical. And we have a strong desire to deliver on the outcomes for our customers, both internally and externally. But, you know, we're all trying to balance our home lives too and help our teams do that the best that they can, and really having empathy for some of that, I think has been and will continue to be really important. And I think another area that I at least have seen a major change is really collaborating digitally. You know, I've read something a few weeks back around how it can actually be more exhausting to continuously meet and engage virtually. You know, you have to listen more intensely, you have to speak with more conviction and passion sometimes to get your words across, especially if you're not leveraging video and other things. It can just be exhausting. And I think, you know, I personally haven't found, you know, the secret sauce also for some of the brainstorming and collaboration. Like, how do we do that the best we possibly can virtually? You know, at our training center in Minnesota here, we're very spoiled that we have a conference room that has floor to ceiling whiteboards. And, you know, it's so much magic happens in that room when we could be together and brainstorm. And I think that's another piece of it, is really how do we find ways to really facilitate that energy and innovation and curiosity virtually? I think that's one thing I'm still really trying to find that secret sauce myself.
Absolutely. And as you think around the talent lifecycle, whether it's hiring or learning and development, career pathing, succession planning, what do you think the biggest or greatest changes there have been?
Well, I know the entire talent cycle has seen a tremendous amount of change. But of course, since my focus is primarily on learning and development, you know, I'll speak to what we've seen specifically in that space. And I think the biggest one that I've seen over the last 6 months, especially with the pandemic, has been the acceleration of the learning technology strategy. You know, I would say we probably got 18 months worth of learning technology strategy, what I thought we were going to get done over the next 18 months in the first 3 to 6 months of this year. So it's been, you know, really has accelerated that, of course, because we needed to. The other piece of it has been interesting of our, the appetite of our associates for consuming learning virtually has really grown. And I think, if anything, this has given us an opportunity to show a bit of maybe where there was some skepticism previously around whether it's, you know, virtual instructor led or videos or even some e-learnings. You know, maybe if there was skepticism previously, now knowing we don't have classroom and physical face-to-face learning as an opportunity more, you know, there's more people that are giving some of these digital solutions a chance. But, you know, we've really learned different ways to deliver learning in innovative ways, and we've really found our learners to be very energized by it. So that's been, you know, really great. And, you know, I think part of this too, that kind of goes lockstep in this, is really is a bit of a need to think like a marketer. You know, the consumerization of learning, we talk about that a lot, right? Like how we can make it more of this consumer-like experience. But I think about that a lot. Like think about how our learners like to learn outside of work, and how can we mimic that more within our organization and their professional life? And, you know, I think we can all think of different examples where we've just needed to solve something or troubleshoot something in our day-to-day personal life. And, you know, whether it's like a light turns on your dashboard and you're not sure exactly what it means, like you don't typically sign up for a course in community education 6 weeks down the road, or even honestly probably grab the 500 page manual in your glove compartment. It's often maybe safely, of course, pulled over, starts with a Google search and maybe ends with a YouTube video or something of that. And that kind of troubleshooting, how do we help people to leverage, have that similar experience within the walls and the firewalls within an organization? So I think that's something we've been doing, you know, as I think about the acceleration of our learning strategy, that's really where we've been thinking more about it, is really more that modern learning experience and mimicking some of that. But with that, I think you really have to think like a marketer and like a marketing agency, and, you know, where there's so much competition for people's energy. So, and attention, and now more than ever, as you know, they're getting more emails than ever and all of it. Like, how do we cut through the noise and really, you know, create some curiosity and get the response that we want and get them to engage with the content? And that's where, again, I think we can start to think about ways that we can catch attention or have taglines that draw people in, or again, just think about different ways almost with campaigns that we can deliver our learning to people in ways that, again, not only will they find value in it and the vehicle that it's delivered, but they'll want to, you know, engage with it when they see it. So I think those are some of the key pieces that I've seen, at least from a learning and development perspective, you know, post-pandemic, and how we've changed and really adapted.
And you've kind of touched upon some of them in terms of, you're talking about being adaptable, the problem-solving component, you know, communicating through this new digital medium. Are there certain skills or competencies that you feel are particularly important right now for an organization?
Yeah, I think the first one that I can really think of is really empathy. And I think we've probably all heard, you know, quite a bit around, you know, with the pandemic and how critical empathy is. But it's just, I think it's something not only for leaders, of course, that's important. I think as leaders, we need to be more empathetic than ever, but, you know, including for our colleagues, our customers, other stakeholders that we work with, you know, always continuing to assume positive intent, knowing that everyone is, you know, coming to do their best work, but also taking time to really just kind of check in with people and seek to understand, ask how you can help, because we just don't know where people are in their journeys. You know, maybe they've are dealing with children at home that they're having to do two jobs and try to keep kids busy while they're trying to work. Or maybe they're dealing with, somebody in their family maybe has become ill or other pieces. So I think there's just now is just this time more than ever that's going to be really critical to just have empathy. And I think also another big one that I've seen is resilience. You know, although most of us are at least 6 months into this COVID-19 world, and although it is starting to feel like this new normal, I think we're mourning our normal lives still a bit. And there's so many unknowns still. And I even think about it for industries that maybe have been most impacted by the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of concern. When will things go back to normal? When will the businesses rebound? And when will this, you know, be all but a memory? I think we're all hopeful for that day. But each day, you know, we get up and we do our best, and we, with what we know today, and things change continuously, but it's all we can do. And this will pass. That's the thing I think I have to keep reminding myself too, is like everything, this will pass. We just have to keep pushing through. And, you know, one thing that our CEO, Doug Baker, mentioned a while back that it really just struck me was he also said, we have to make sure that the actions and decisions that we make during this time are ones that we'll be proud of later. And I think that's a key thing for leaders too, is through this, make sure we're being resilient and leading our teams, but again, ultimately doing the best thing by our people and by our customers. I think that's what's really important.
Absolutely. And what do you think organizations can do to prepare their employees for the future with respect to some of these skills and competencies that you've mentioned?
I think one of the most important pieces, and it sounds so basic, but is just starting with defining them. You know, a clearly defined framework of these skills is really the North Star or the blueprint to a solid, you know, again, HR strategy, but for me personally, a learning and development strategy. And, you know, I'm always very partial to having both leadership competencies defined in addition to functional or technical competencies, with the thought that those leadership competencies really drive that overall strategy, those behaviors of the organization, you know, and the culture. I mean, they really, what makes that organization unique, those leadership competencies should really drive that. And I would say, you know, 80 to 90% of those may be, yes, absolutely. If you talk to anybody in the organization, that very succinctly represents what a good leader or, you know, the best looks like within our organization and the behaviors we want our people to demonstrate. But part of it may also be a bit, you know, aspirational. As we know, for example, maybe digital or other skills that organizations have a lot of aspirations, but maybe aren't quite there yet. So again, I think those leadership competencies are critical from that perspective in keeping the organization true to what's made it great to date, but then also to help continue pushing for growth and for the future. And then as we go over back to those functional and technical competencies, that's where we get really crisp and crystal clear into what looks good looks like for each of those functions and the technical pieces. And I think that's really important because that's where I think day to day, you know, the bulk of what people are doing, the, you know, there's the what as far as how they help to contribute to the business and execution of the business strategy, and giving them some clarity around what good looks like and how we drive for that, I think is just really, really, really important. So I think the definition is the starting point. And, you know, personally, I've always worked with a vendor partner in that space where they've helped to really drive that with the expertise that they bring. But ultimately, when you're done with this robust process, you know, the ultimate outcome is a competency model that your business leaders look at it and they're like, yes, this is us. And this is what good looks like in our organization. And of course, from an HR perspective and others, it's legally valid, supports our business strategy, supports our HR strategy, that type of piece. And again, ultimately can really be interwoven in all aspects of the talent cycle, you know, from people entering the organization and talent acquisition, developing their careers, succession and performance management. So I think those are, and of course, development plans in a learning and development space. So there's a lot there. I think that's really important. But then I think where this can go sideways, when you have a really great done all the work, engaged the leaders, defined it. You've got a tremendous competency framework, and it's really fantastic. Where I think we can go sideways is if it just sits on a shelf somewhere and it never really becomes owned by the business. And that's where I think some HR folks can get frustrated, because they've done all this great work, they've defined it, but we just don't see it make to the next level, which is really key. And that's where I go back to what I said earlier about truly acting like that marketer. Think about ways that you can get people excited by it. Think about especially ways the business leaders can own it, be champions of it, and really help be the voice to the business that this is really key and important. And that's the work I think that's, you know, once you've defined it, is really critical, is to getting it out to the business so they feel like it's their own, that they're owning it. And, you know, I think, you know, when you start to see and hear people using the language in talent conversations, whether it's interviews or, you know, development plans or succession planning, that's where it starts to get really exciting, because you know that they're starting to own it and see it, you know, as their own, which is really, really critical. So I think those are the two biggest pieces from my perspective, the definition and then ultimately getting them adopted by the business.
Absolutely. That's definitely one of those common mistakes. I think you've nailed it there, that we see with some of our folks, is you take all the time to define it and then nobody uses it, or you don't think about, in a way, it's change management. So thinking about, as you've talked about, the marketing or the communication side of how are you going to get people excited to use this thing you've spent all the time developing. So building on that, what do you think are the future threats or pain points if an organization does not take the time to, say, define clearly the skills needed for success? What could go wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest risks is really just this assumption across the board that that everybody knows consistently what good looks like, or is defining what good looks like consistently. Because I think most of us, regardless of what organization you're talking about, if you spoke about a specific role or specific organization and asked different people, you will get varying degrees of what they think good looks like. And there's just not that anchor for people to go back to that consistently, like, we've agreed this is what truly defines success in our organization. And again, my preference is not only defining the competencies, but also having a proficiency scale that goes along with it, so you can understand and map, you know, on a scale of, you know, building to expertise, you know, I think that's really critical. And when left open, I just think it leaves so much room for interpretation of what every function or team or role really needs to be successful. And the risks can be rather huge. I mean, it could be that you're hiring people who aren't the right fit for roles. You may not onboard people effectively. We may spend a lot of time training people with just in case, like, well, just in case. So we've got to teach them all of these things. And oftentimes maybe it ends up being a lot of what we call scrap learning, where it's maybe just a bit wasted. They may not be able to retain it all. It may not be the right content at the right time. And so again, because we don't have that North Star really guiding the work, we have this tendency maybe to go up, you know, just in case, and really overwhelm the learner oftentimes with more than they can even neurologically or cognitively hold, versus taking much more of this learner-centric approach of what's the right timing, and, you know, even having some of that troubleshooting or performance support that's available to them really just in time. And then other risks, I think even bigger ones, is we start to think about our leadership pipeline and succession plans. You know, if we aren't, you know, clear on what truly defines a high potential associate or who would the best successors are, we may put the wrong people on the bench for future roles, which could be a risk for the business. We may not have the right plan to get people ready for those big roles. So I think there are some pretty major risks there. So, you know, overall, it creates a lot of inefficiencies. It may waste, you know, time and resources. And ultimately, if you think about it again from the learner or the employee's perspective, it can cause frustration and even, you know, decreased engagement, which isn't, of course, anything we want. So that's where I think it's been really critical to really go after some of those pain points. And I think having that defined model really does help mitigate some of those risks.
Absolutely. And building on some of what you said so far, if you were to give advice to somebody who is maybe starting a competency project for the first time, what would you tell them?
That's a great one. Really, again, make sure if it's not something that as the talent leader or HR leader, if it's not an area you have expertise, don't be afraid to ask for it. And some people may have expertise within their organization. Otherwise, of course, there's vendor partners out there that have the expertise and have done this over and over again and bring, you know, external libraries of competencies to bring from. There's no reason you have to start from scratch. Finance and HR and communications or whatnot. Like oftentimes these functions have very similar competencies regardless of the organization. But then a partner can also help you customize when there are things that are unique to your business that can't be bought off the shelf per se and need to be really dug in some of the key differentiators of your business and organization and roles and whatnot. So I think asking for help is always the right thing if it feels like something that's outside of your wheelhouse. And to really, I think, get the buy-in of the business. And the business, if they haven't seen a competency model in play before and seen the value that it brings, there may be some hesitation there. So I think oftentimes it comes from a place of, if you've got trust with your business partners and you've earned it over time and delivered enough for them and enough small wins or big wins that they've got a good relationship, sometimes they just need to trust you that this is the right thing and that it will really add a lot of value. Because I have rarely seen a business leader get a competency model after all the work was done and not get it at that moment. Like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand. This is us. This is gives us this framework to discuss our talent and our people and to plan more effectively and efficiently. So I think that's really the key piece is really, again, seeking help when needed and also making sure the business is with you along the way, because they're going to be part of the process if it's done right. But ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, it won't be successful from the perspective of being bought into and adopted if they don't have some skin in the game and see the value and ultimately be along with you for that journey. And that's going to be really critical. And again, most leaders I've worked with in this space love this once it's done. And it's very easy to convert them to champions because they're so passionate about it.
Absolutely. Well, that was all the questions that I had for you today. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we end?
No, I think the biggest thing right now, I guess as a learning leader to others during this time is, you know, I know we're all on a journey and so much is unknown at this point. And I think, gosh, if we all look back to the beginning of 2020, we had no clue what waited for us this year. But just to remember the good things that have come out of it, it's sometimes challenging, but there have been silver linings. I think of how much, again, our learning technology has advanced. My team has grown their skills in this space in incredible ways. We've had an opportunity to really grow the relationship with our business partners in so much stronger ways because we've had to step in and really help them to build some critical capability. You know, at Ecolab, we believe our frontline, we know our frontline is our differentiator. The expertise that they bring to support our customers is key. And we've needed to step in and help them learn about COVID-19 and the pandemic response and all of that. And I just think of how that's really helped us to grow in our relationship with our business partners. So I know everybody out there in HR and learning probably, although it's been a challenging year for sure, and will continue to be, just to keep looking for those silver linings, because I think that's not to be forgotten about. And as I mentioned earlier, this too shall pass, although not soon enough, I think, for many of us.
Well said. Perfect. Well, I want to thank my guest today, Chris, for joining me. And if you want to reach out to Chris's LinkedIn, the best place to do that?
Absolutely. Yes, please.
Absolutely. So reach out to Chris on LinkedIn if you want to follow up further on anything that we've discussed today. And thanks, everyone.